Hi, and welcome to Right Stuff International. I'm your host, Parker J. Thank you for joining me for this edition. Today, we're going to be talking to my guest, co-host, and contributor, Tracy Krause. She is the author of the book, Three Strand Cord. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. I'm really excited to dig into this novel because it is a wonderful tale of three friends and their convoluted, twisted lives. If you love new adult stories and romantic stories, plus a little bit of women's fiction, this is the book for you. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today on Amazon.com. So before we get into our interview, I always want to thank our Christian corporate sponsor, ChristianBookClub.net. To find out how they can help you build your readership, go to ChristianBookClub.net. And see how they can help you. We also want to thank our partner, Readio App, for their support. If you want to put your book on a platform that is solely dedicated to the Most High while not getting lost in Amazon's algorithms or having your book censored, Readio App is that app for you. Readio App also has an opportunity for you as a Christian nonfiction writer to help our brothers and sisters who are currently incarcerated. Readio has decided to partner with the Christian Convict Book Club to provide incarcerated men and women in the USA with nonfiction Christian books. Author and founder of the CCBC, Adam Sharp, stated that reading books as he serves time has undoubtedly changed his life. There are numerous testimonies of prisoners who develop relationships with the Most High God. If this is something that appeals to you as a Christian nonfiction author, may I suggest that you click readioapp.com and see how you can be a part of this wonderful ministry as the words that the Most High God gives you can breathe life and freedom into our incarcerated brothers and sisters in the U.S. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce my guest, co-host, and contributor today, Tracy Krause. Tracy, how are you doing today?
I am fantastic. I just want to thank you so much for inviting me onto your show. It's very exciting. I'm very privileged and honored to be here.
And thank you so much because, as you already know, I've enjoyed your story. Can't wait to delve into it. And so thankful for your help as we begin our discussion because Three Strand Cord is a multifaceted story as we follow the lives of three friends as they all intertwine. And I love this book because it has something of the sense of almost a Joy Luck Club, the story of following these women. It also has a bit of the new age angst that a lot of romance books kind of follow nowadays, but it doesn't just stay in the angsty. It has a spiritual component to it as well as their lives begin to spiral out of control. Each of these stories plays upon a different romantic trope that's very popular in the romance industry, but in a very unique way. So you're not quite sure how things are going to end up. And so without further ado, let's go ahead and get started with our discussion. First thing we have to talk about is you, though, Tracy. Go ahead, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm actually a Canadian, so I live in Canada, and I've been writing for 35 years. A lot of that was a closet writer or whatever, but I've been published since about 2009. I've got quite a few novels, 10 novels. I'm also a playwright, so I've got quite a few plays out there because I used to teach drama at school when I was a public school teacher. I think my real love in terms of writing, though, is novels. So, and I do love writing romance novels, although I'm currently branching out into sci-fi because I'm a big sci-fi spec nerd and a former Star Trek fan. I shouldn't say former. I'm a Trekkie. Okay, I just admitted it. I've often had people say, well, if you love science fiction so much, why are you writing romance? But I almost felt like I couldn't do it well enough or something. Like, I love science fiction so much. It's like, I could never write that. But I can write romance, and it's what I do love to do. So I don't know. I just sort of feel like I'm doing what God has asked me to do at this particular point in time, write the stories that are in my heart and see where they land.
I'm a diehard Trekkie. The only thing, I have not picked up Discovery or Picard yet. And that's because I want so much to like them. And I'm afraid that I won't because they've deviated a little bit from the original canon of the series. Plus, I really am a purist. So I really like Star Trek, the original series. That's what I grew up with. This is what we used to play games to. And I can almost quote every episode in the original series. So to take the original series and to go before that, to me, is sacrilege. And yes, I said sacrilege. Again, this is the fanaticism of Trekkie in me, but I won't go into all of that. My favorite episode of Star Trek is actually called The Apple, and that's when Kirk lands on this planet with everyone, Chekhov and his girl, and they meet this tribal culture, and it's like only 8 of them there, and they are controlled by a robot named Ball. And that's one of my favorite episodes, called The Apple, and it's a playoff Adam and Eve, and of course the purported apple in the garden. That episode really kind of embodies my love of sci-fi and romance. You have the speculative edge to it. You have that romantic element to it as well. So that's why I love romance and sci-fi. I totally feel you.
My favorite episode, Amok Time.
Yeah,
great.
I love Amok Time. That's one of my favorite episodes too, is Amok Time. And of course, we can go into Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, which I think is very prevalent for today's time. And for those of you who don't know, that's when the Riddler guest starred on the show, and one side of his face was black, one side of his face was white, and he calls the humans, "You monotone freaks." And we're like, dude, we're not the freaks here. You know, I love that episode. There's so many of them that I love.
And it was timely then, and it's timely now. Yeah, we could talk about this all day. Like,
yeah, we really could. We really could. But, you know, I want people to know about your book, though. So we'll go ahead and talk about the books. You say you were also a playwright. And as a playwright, do you find it difficult to go from, let's say, writing a novel to writing a play? Because there are two different styles of writing.
My plays, and I'm just going to be right honest here. I make more money on my plays than I make on my novel. I actually make money on plays. How that happened was because I was a public school teacher for more than 20 years, and I taught art and drama. Sometimes there was, you know, I just couldn't find the perfect play for the particular cast that I was working with, so I would write one. And so this went on for, you know, 10 years of my teaching career or whatever. And then when I started, when I finally found an agent and started publishing novels, was like, maybe somebody else would like to see these plays too. And so then I started pitching my plays. They're all straight up comedy parodies, usually of famous stories or fairy tales or Greek myths or whatever. So at the same time, but totally separate, and they don't ever seem to really meet. So I sort of got into writing plays by default.
This book is so good. And I was reading it today on the edge of my seat. I wouldn't even hesitate to say, even if you don't like romance, pick up this book because you're going to enjoy it. You say, well, I'm not really a romance fan, but I like Tracy's romance. That's exactly what you're saying, because it's really good. I will put it in the category of maybe edgy Christian fiction or even edgy women's fiction. I will put it in that because she does tackle some topics that some of the mainstream Christian publishing companies won't necessarily tackle. Plus, her characters don't come from this pure white, lily white background of chastity and good choices and good decisions. As a matter of fact, they make really bad decisions. Throughout this whole book, they're making bad decisions. But it's refreshing because it lets you know that even when we make bad decisions, even when we self-sabotage ourselves, God is still able to pull us out of our mess. It follows the story of three friends. And I'm going to stop there. I'm going to let you take over. So kind of tell us what the book is about, but don't give away any big major spoilers.
The three friends are Tempest, Stella, and Charisse. I don't know if you noticed, but it was intentional on my part. I mean, it's called three-strand cord, but, you know, it's TSC, Tempest, Stella, Charisse. So that was my little play on words there, my little acrostic. They are from three very, very different backgrounds, but they met at a boarding school, and that's how they created this bond. They all have their hang-ups, as you said. I mean, everybody has baggage. They get tangled up in Teresa's decision to chase after her Italian lover. So she runs off to Europe in chasing him, and the other two kind of have to cover for her and things. And it does a tangled web of, there's, you know, some intrigue, there's some drug dealers and different things that kind of drive the story. But also there's the romance part of it. You know, we have one of them gets involved with these two brothers that work on her father's ranch, and she's kind of torn between, you know, which one she is most attracted to. I wouldn't call it a love triangle per se, but kind of along that line, where she is forced to choose between one of them or choose one of them. I'm not doing a very good job of describing it. So much for an elevator pitch.
Well, no, it's a good thing because there's so many layers to the story because these three friends are growing up. It's almost a coming of age, even though they're older already. It definitely falls into the category of new adult because new adult, they are out of college, just really starting to get into life, and they're starting to experience things, and they're starting to explore relationships. And a new adult fiction, which is relatively new, it's a relatively burgeoning genre within the industry. With new adult, there's a lot of angst involved, and so they have to make all these decisions. But unlike this book, the new adult books usually fall back on sexual interaction to make decisions for them. Oh, we had great sex, therefore I must be with him. But even though we had good sex, he's still a jerk. And so that's not necessarily the case with this one. In this thing, you don't have that element because they are navigating so many different things. And Charisse, who is our rich girl, she's our rich girl, but she's not the typical rich girl where she's really shallow. She actually has a deep, loyal bond with her two friends. She may come off as shallow, but as I was reading the book, I got the impression she's not as shallow as you think you are, as she thinks she is. I think she thinks she's shallow. She says, like, I'm fine being a bimbo. She says in the book, I'm fine being a bimbo. But I actually think she wants to be more than that. But she's also a product of her environment. Tempest is more like the poor relation, if you will. And Tempest really mimics her name because she is over-analytical. She thinks things over and over again. And I even told Tracy before we started recording, I'm like, Tracy, Tempest, it's like, stop thinking. You will not stop thinking. And of course, Tracy titillates me with the words, oh, she has her own book. Oh, and the other friend is Stella. So I love how their dynamics are all different, but they're really good friends. And I think having that friendship with women is important because women do need women. That sisterhood is important. That's something that's really evoked in this book is this great camaraderie of sisterhood. And why is that an important element in this book? Because they're all navigating different parts of their lives and they're all intertwined. Eventually they all their problems intertwine and blow up with each other. But why is that sisterhood so important for women in general when they're dealing with life?
Well, I'm actually glad that you brought that up because I have in the past tried to, you know, with all of my books, once they're written, I sort of try to distill them down to one word. And that is the word that I chose for this book. It's sisterhood. I think, as you said, it's important that we have that kind of trust and that kind of bond with other women. I mean, yes, you know, I'm married and I love my husband and he's my best friend. But, you know, I think there are things that only women understand, you know, and it is something special to have that kind of sisterhood and to know that there are people who understand you and who have your back and that kind of thing. So I think that's a really important element in this book is showing that, especially because they do go through such difficult things and so many trials. And they aren't the same. Like that's, you know, the angsty part you said, and certainly the, like, Charisse is very promiscuous. I mean, that's just part of who she is, and she embraces it. It's like, yeah, well, I like sex, so that's what I do, you know. And I think that's not necessarily something you'd see in a Christian book. But on the other hand, I feel that message of grace and salvation is very important to me. And I think it's strong in the book. I mean, at the beginning, the only one who is a Christian is Tempest. But as you said, she's the one who's always too much in her head. Like, oh, no, but I'm not being a good enough person. Or what if, you know, this or that or whatever. So even though she's the believer, she's in her head too much. I think Stella is, matter of fact, she has had a relationship, a certain relationship with God in a way through the Catholic Church, but kind of, you know, just dropped it because it didn't seem relevant. And so, you know, then she rekindles that part of her life. And I'm not going to tell you what Dries, because she has her own book too.
Cannot wait to read both of their books because I'm definitely want to find out what happened with these women. But each of their stories, like, they intertwine, they start off separately and they intertwine. And what was really unique is how each of their problems that they have really affected their own personality. Tempest knows that she is the poor relation. She is aware of her status in life. And so for her to trust a particular character in the story who has a lot of money. It's quite intimidating. Although I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't be intimidated by a person with a lot of money. Like, if you want to help me, brother, I am not going to say no. But I know she doesn't want to be used. But because of who she is, that attracts one of her quote-unquote love interests in the story. I'm saying that quote-unquote because we're not really sure what he is. And she's not really sure what he is. And we're sitting there going, make up your mind.
Yeah, I think you might be surprised at how that ends up.
I can't wait to find out. And then we have Stella with her problems and everything. And hers is more down to earth because she's more of a down to earth woman too. And so the problem she has reflects her environment, where it has to do with her dad's ranch. And then Charisse, a woman who has everything and doesn't really have everything because she went to go follow after this man, this Italian man. That's always been something women have done, is chased after men. He had left, and this is not a spoiler or anything. He had left, and the whole story kind of begins. She says, well, I'm going to go follow him because my parents don't like him, but I like him. I love him. And then she finds out this is not the person I thought it was, which is also a caution about be careful who you sleep with, because you never know who you're actually sleeping with. So there's a lot involved in here. So these aren't like these stellar characters of Christendom. They are very flawed. Intermixed with all these problems that they're having, the Lord is very much there. And there's one part in the book where one of the characters make this thing like maybe he's trying to get our attention because everything kind of blows up. And I can't help but think of right now, as we all deal with the pandemic, social unrest, uncertainty, hopelessness, despair, as we deal with financial woes and medical problems, there's a lot going on. And you can only think, you know, maybe the world's not going out of control. Maybe God is saying, I've been here all along.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important thing. As you said, like in today, in what's happening around the world, and especially in the U.S., you know, looking at that as an outsider, it's like, my mind's blown daily when I see what's happening south of where I live. I think that ties into what you just said. I mean, God isn't surprised, and he's still in control. And it's one of the things that I try to do in my writing, certainly in this book, but even in all of my novels, is sort of bring that sense that, yes, I love the romance part, but finding the love of your life isn't what is going to make your life perfect. And it's the same with these three women. I mean, they're all looking for love, but that's not the answer to everything in life. And even their friendship, that's not the answer. Like, at the end of the day, the answer is the Lord. But I hate being preachy. I don't try to fill my books with a lot of scriptures and things. I just try to keep it real. How do you talk to your friend about the Lord? Or how does that happen in everyday life, right? Like, I don't spew scripture verses and then also attach the verse and the chapter. And that is from Luke, whatever. Like, you know, that's not real. So I try to keep it really authentic in that way. For me, that's really, really important. Life isn't saccharine sweet. And being a Christian isn't about being perfect. Everybody's got baggage and everybody's got flaws. And you bring that to the table. And that, so for me, that's really important, is to make sure that there is a sense of that authenticity, and there isn't perfection. But at the end of the day, what's it about? It's about Jesus, even if I'm a screw up.
Amen. Even if I'm a screw up, I love that. Particularly in the story, we travel all over the place in the story. We travel to California, we travel to Texas, and we also travel to Italy. You did really good taking us to these settings without being bogged down by setting, which I think it's a wonderful ability that you have there, because I was able to visualize everything. And this is something that, just a writer technique for the writers out there, you don't have to be super descriptive of everything that you see. Like one young lady recently said, you don't have to have an APB out on description. You know, describe it and then keep moving. They make these friendship bracelets, and they were 12, and now they're in their 20s now, like 24, 25, somewhere around there. Interestingly enough, I like the dynamic of Stella's story, because she comes back home from her ranch, and she's an environmentalist. She's in environmental science, I think, or technologies. All of a sudden, she sees things differently because she's a scientist, and she wants to help out the ranch, and people are like, don't change. And yeah. I can see how that's a problem for her. So here she is coming back home. She wants to be part of home. She didn't want to go off to boarding school, but her stepmother was like, oh, get the kid out of here. And then she comes back home. She wants to be part of it. But there's this thing about the practical applications of school as opposed to the routine of doing your job. And that clashes a lot too. So what were some of the things you were talking about, and why was that an important element to put in this story? Is it just for the story's sake? But I often felt as I was reading your story, there are underlying themes as well that you were trying to subtly put in there too.
Yeah, you know, I'm full disclosure, I'm probably more left-leaning than a lot of Christians that I know, and I'm okay with that. I try to bring in, I wouldn't say hot-button topics, but topics that I think are relevant for today. And so you bring that one up in this particular book. But, you know, I have in previous books, and even in the newest book, which is Tempest Tossed, Tempest Story, it just released this year. There is an element in there about gender issues and gay people in the church, and what do we do about that? And that's really, really tough. That's really tricky. You know, I've dealt in previous books a lot with multiracial relationships and racism and things like that, because to me, these are important topics. These are things that as Christians, we shouldn't be hiding our head in the sand. And we need to recognize that we need to talk about stuff and not pretend it's not happening. So I also really try hard not to give the right answer. Mm-hmm. So I like to bring things up. I like to shed a spotlight on them, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily want to give the answer, because I'm not sure a lot of times that there is a black and white answer.
Sin complicates everything. It makes things gray. And the Lord is very, if you really think about it, that's where mercy comes in at. You know, we should have justice, but he gives us mercy. I wholeheartedly agree with you. There are some things, they are black and white, but we live in this sin-sick world that grays everything out. And so you realize that people are quite complex. You can't just label them one way. And the more you try to label a person, the less that label doesn't fit. And so I totally understand where you're coming from. But, you know, like I said, you can't put your head in the sand, but, you know, we can't avoid it either, because we have to be in the world, but not of the world. And I think the church should be like a hospital where the sick come.
I wouldn't say I look for something like that in each book, but it seems like it always crops up. There's always something in every one of my books that seems to pop up that's a bit of a potential hot button topic.
Yeah.
But, and I just because I feel it's important, but also then, like I say, I try not to be the one with all the answers. Like, I want God to be the one with all the answers. So there's maybe, you know, that's sort of how it's left, is like, well, I don't actually know what to do about this, but God does.
It comes to sovereignty. It comes right back to sovereignty. And I totally appreciate that. So for those of you listening and watching us or talking to Tracy, she's the author of the book, Three Strand Cord. It's available on Amazon. Lots of good stuff going on in that and in the other books in this series as well. I've been reading the first book, really enjoyed it. It has every romance trope that I particularly enjoy, but with a very unique twist. And it also reads like women's fiction. It also reads like new adults. So if you like either of those genres, you're going to get them all in this book, which is really why it's hard to categorize the story. It's hard to say exactly what it is. I'm calling it romance because that is what is my thing. I love romance. But someone else reading it may say, wow, this is a really good women's fiction novel. And someone else reading, like, oh my gosh, I love this new adult college book. And so it really is going to hit all those different areas that people like to read. And I think it's brilliant.
I'm very happy to hear that, because as you said, it's sometimes difficult. I found it a little bit difficult to categorize my writing, because there is, like you said, is it contemporary? There's women's issues, always usually some kind of suspense and intrigue. There's definitely romance. It's Christian, but not squeaky clean. So where does this fit? I don't know, you know, but
it's a Tracy Krause. That's what you call it. It's a Tracy Krause.
I think modern Christian readers are mature enough. And, you know, I think that's changing a little bit. We don't see the same landscape that there used to be, where people just wanted, you know, I just want to read my bonnet romances or whatever, which is okay. I'm not dissing those, but
of course not. Well, no, like I said, it's preference too. And I did a podcast on that with another gentleman, because he was a pastor. He likes to write horror. And he had got some flack because he said a pastor shouldn't be writing this. And of course, I had took issue with that. I said, what do you think the pastor's supposed to do? Just be here to look at you? You know what? He can't enjoy his own recreation. you know, anyway, I won't get into that. It was just really interesting to see that, because you can't put it together. And I think that's a good thing, that you are using the gift that God gave you in this manner. And that's what he wants you to do with that gift. And that's important to our viewers out there. You have to use the gift that God gave you in the way he wants you to use it. So you may have to be the one that stands by yourself with really hard-hitting fiction, or you may be the one that has the gentle fiction, because some people don't want to be reminded of the world. It's their preference. I totally understand that. So where you lie is, you know, write the story you want to read. That's how I say, write the story you want to read. And like I said, I thoroughly enjoyed the book. So can't wait to get into the other books out here. In the few moments we have left, if we get ready to end our show, what are some other projects that you're working on? We know you're working on a sci-fi project. What are some other things you're working on?
So I am working, it's the first time I've ever written, what I'm writing right now is a young adult, actually. So it's my first time doing that, a young adult sci-fi. I have another sci-fi that I'm, you know, working on polishing up, which is more along the lines of my other work, like with the romantic suspense and stuff, but just with a sci-fi twist. I have quite a few projects on the go. I wish I was a little quicker at churning them out, getting them done, but I have another project I'm really excited about. It's called Checkout, C-Z-E-C-H, and it's historical. In the 1980s, when hockey players were defecting, it was the first hockey players defecting to North America to play hockey from behind the Iron Curtain, you know, that was before the Berlin Wall fell and stuff like that. So it was really fascinating. I was doing some research on the Stasny brothers, who were the first defectors. Hockey players defecting in the 1980s. And so this is like, this is inspiring. I could write something about that. So I'm doing that and working on a devotional book. I kind of have a lot of irons in the fire at the same time, but I can do that now. So
nothing wrong with that. I like the idea of the hockey players are causing the sports romance. There's a genre for that too. And with sports romances, though, I'll read them. I mean, cause I do enjoy them, you know, but it's just I'm not a sports fan. So if they get too technical, I do not care. Like, I do not care what if it's a goalie or whatever. I don't know.
I want to keep it more, like I say, along the lines of some of my other work where the sports isn't going to be the main
theme of it.
You still have to, you know what you're talking about a little bit.
Right, right. For sure. Tracy, go ahead and just give some encouraging words to our aspiring authors out there.
Well, I think the first thing is you need to write what you feel called to write and stop comparing yourself to other people, because, you know, you want to be authentic to who you are. Obviously, you have to be thinking about your audience too, but that's the first thing for me is to be authentic and you know, look at what is the reason for writing. Like if it's to make a whole bunch of money, then it probably ain't happening. So, you know, you got to write what you love and what you're passionate about. And then I think that'll come through. And then I think the second big piece would be don't give up. I mean, I started writing as a young mom when I had a brand new baby, because I was an artist before that, but it was too much work to bring out all the paints and stuff. And make a mess in our tiny little house. So I borrowed an old typewriter and I started writing, and that's in it. And I got hooked, but that was like 35 years ago. You know, my daughter's 35. So I wrote and wrote and wrote. And then when I started submitting, I got rejected. And it was years of rejection, hundreds of rejections, and it could kill you, you know, but I didn't give up. And, you know, finally, eventually got an agent, got my first book deal, yada, yada. The rest is history, as they say. But that's the big thing is never give up, because everyone's path is different, you know. And if you get discouraged by the person who, they self-published and now they're a millionaire, you'll die. So don't give up. Be yourself. Keep learning. Never be too afraid to take criticism. I think criticism has been my biggest most valuable teacher.
Tracy, once again, thank you so much for helping me out today, being with me on this episode of Write Stuff International. Can't wait to have you back on the show and have you back real soon.
Well, I would. It would be my pleasure and my honor. And thank you. This has been such fun.
We were talking to Tracy Krause, who is the author of the book, Three Strand Cord. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. If you want to prayerfully consider supporting this ministry, simply go to patreon.com/writestuff. You can become a pen member for as little as $10 a month, and there are other options available for you. Really enjoy those who have been helping with this ministry. Really thank you so much. But if you can't do that financially, you know what I really love? I covet your prayers. God willing, we hope to continue until he comes back. Thank you so much for joining for this episode of Right Stuff International. You have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day, and God bless.